pirates. In front of the Empire, to all you beta haters out there, we'll blow your planet up.
What does I mean, my master?
It's a disaster, Skywalker, we're after.
What if he can be turned to the dark side?
Yes, he'd be a powerful ally, another dark Jedi.
He will join us or die. We got Death Star. 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 We got Death Star.
And you know that we got it. Death Star. And you know that we got it.
Death Star. Get your ass over here right now. For monkeying around that damn land speeder. Where did two droids ask you to clean, boy? Clean your room?
I'm blowing. I know I'm on probation. I clean the toys, can I go to the Hashi station? I gotta lay away on the power converter, but now you're treating me like a scruffy nerf herder.
Boom, use the force to run, run to Dagobah, run to Dagobah. Boom, use the force to run, run to Dagobah, run to Dagobah.
I'm a nerf gun, I'm a soldier, a mounted and poacher. I thought I told ya, don't be unwise, just be not by my side.
Yo, then, why you being a player hater? You know that I still must confront Lord Vader.
But Luke, not bringing you here.
But there's a city in the clouds where they're keeping my crew. A Jedi's gotta do what a Jedi's gotta do. So now, Vader, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, that's right, R2. I just set a new course. We're going to Cloud City. It's a mighty good gin and tonic. Which makes me a another.
Impressive. Now release your anger. You must have sensed that your prisoner is danger.
Oh, I just sliced off my hand.
It's imperative that you understand. Obi-Wan would never bother. Tell me you about your partner.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
Then there's something I must reveal. Then I'm your father. 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 I'm your father.
Look at the box. Look at them. 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 Look at the box.
Zoom a little, zoom in a rocket ship. Off we go on a trip. Heading for the moon at a rocket clip. We're gonna zoom, zoom, rocket. Zoom a little, zoom, now we're almost free from the Earth's gravity. Zooming to the moon at terrific speed, because there is no friction. Soon we'll see if the moon is made out of green cheese. Ha, 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 ha. Zoom, we're here at the moon. Let's see what the moon is like.
Hello and welcome everyone to yet another edition of your friendly neighborhood science and technology radio show, My Science Project, on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host for the show, Julia. We just finished celebrating the 30th anniversary of the original release of the film Star Wars. And in honor and recognition of the first Star Wars film, today's show is going to be taking an in-depth and very contemplative and thoughtful look at the phenomenon that is Star Wars. In other words, I'm going to play you some weird music, and we'll look at some interesting and odd trivia. It's also Father's Day this Sunday, and for all fathers out there, I've decided to take a little bit of a science tack. So we've got some science news and views that's related to dad stuff. Of course, there are good dads, there are bad dads, there are Darth Vader dads. What do you mean? You didn't know that Darth Vader was Luke's father? Ooh. Sorry. You should rent that film. In addition, I'll share with you an event that's happening around town that is science-related. and some other things that you can get involved with and delve deep into on the World Wide Web. In honor of the 30th anniversary of the original Star Wars film, which was first released on the 25th of May in 1977, the BBC published its top 30 pieces of trivia about Star Wars. This is all about the original film itself. I thought that I would share a few of these tidbits today. Star Wars' original budget was $11 million U.S., and it made $215 million in the U.S. alone during its original release, not subsequent releases. And overseas, it made even more money. It made $337 million American. To put this into context, the final film, Revenge of the Sith, that cost about $113 million U.S. just to make. The original Star Wars film was originally called The Star Wars. This is reminiscent of School of Rock, which was technically called The School of Rock if you look at the opening scene with the neon sign against the brick wall. However, in the case of Star Wars, the word "the" was dropped pretty early on in the creative process. The full title, Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, first appeared when the film was re-released in 1981. Now, George Lucas, the director, as we all know, an inventor and high Jedi priest himself, George Lucas, originally had a contract with Fox for $150,000 for writing and directing the film. But Lucas insisted first on total control and on 40% of merchandising with the franchise, which ended up paying off big time. So Star Wars begins with that opening crawl of text. And that was actually co-written by Brian De Palma, who is the director of Scarface. Sir Alec Guinness, who plays Obi-Wan, made a ton of money from the original Star Wars film. This was because he negotiated a deal for 2% of box office takings, which since it made over $500 million in its initial release, 2% of $500 million turns out to be a tidy $10 million. A fairly decent amount of money. Interestingly, Sir Alec Guinness also refused to do any promotional work for the film. I'm sure that that wouldn't happen nowadays with all the contracts that actors have to sign, demanding that they do all the interviews and jump through all those promotional hoops. C-3PO was played by Anthony Daniels, and R2-D2 was done by Kenny Baker. These two actors are the only ones credited as being in all six of the Star Wars films. Interestingly, Chewbacca was inspired by George Lucas's beloved dog, Indiana, an Alaskan Malamute. An Alaskan Malamute is a type of dog that's usually used as a sled dog, and it's often confused for a Siberian Husky. This is an interesting piece of trivia for Indiana Jones fans, because if you'll recall from the third film, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Indiana is actually called Henry after his dad, who is played by Sean Connery, but Sean Connery's character jokes that Indiana took the family dog's name. This was no doubt an insertion by Lucas or whoever was co-writing the script with reference to Lucas's dog, Indiana. Of all the things, Lucas once said that the shape of the Millennium Falcon was based on a hamburger. And the last bit of trivia I'll share from this BBC News list is that Lucas wanted his sets to look worn and scuffed up, but the studio cleaning service continually cleaned and tidied up after a day's filming, which really, really dismayed Lucas quite a bit. Now, if you're not into the highbrow list of the BBC, you can check out something that I found when I googled Star Wars and the number 30. And this is Star Wars in 30 Seconds Reenacted by Bunnies. www.angryalien.com/1205/StarWarsBuns.asp or Google Star Wars 30 to get rabbits reenacting Star Wars in under 30 seconds.
The force will be with you. The force will be with you. The force will be with you. Obi-Wan is here. The Force is with him. Obi-Wan is here. The Force is with him. The Force is with him. The Force is with him.
It really makes you wonder why disco died out, doesn't it?
A little known piece of trivia, in addition to the other little known pieces of trivia that are floating about regarding Star Wars, the original film, is that there was a holiday special created. When I heard about this, I thought that this must have been an animated special, but in fact, this adds to the kitschiness of this special. It was done live action with the original actors from the film. Star Wars The Holiday Special was aired for one time only on November 17th in 1978. And there's a website dedicated to this special. It was created as an homage and a labor of love to the 21st anniversary of this holiday special. So it was launched in 2003 by someone named Scott Kirkwood and his staff. To check out the site, you can visit www.StarWarsHolidaySpecial.com. And this is where I discovered that you could actually make Wookiee Ookies, or in the English word, Wookiee Cookies. It's an actual official recipe for Wookiee Cookies, or as they're called in this holiday special, Wookiee Ookies, from the Star Wars Cookbook, Wookiee Cookies and Other Galactic Recipes. Lucky for us, since the Wookiee planet Kashyyyk has apparently identical ingredients, or at least flavors, to the planet Earth, this recipe easily translates to your own kitchen. Take 2 1/4 cups of all-purpose flour, a teaspoon of baking soda, a teaspoon of salt, and a teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1 cup of unsalted butter at room temperature, 1 cup of packed brown sugar, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, 2 large eggs, earth eggs from chickens, 1 1/2 teaspoons vanilla extract, and 1 cup of milk chocolate chips and 1 cup of semi-sweet chocolate chips. If you want the actual mechanics of this recipe, it's easy enough to get this book. The Star Wars Cookbook by Robin Davies is available online at a particular major bookseller. You know who I'm talking about, I'm sure. It's not terribly expensive either, and it includes other very special recipes, such as the Princess Leia Danish Dews. You can make your own Yoda soda, as well as dark side salsa, and perhaps my favorite, Wampa snow cones. Now, if this is not enough fun for you, don't worry, because there is a second Star Wars cookbook. It's called The Star Wars Cookbook 2, Darth Malt and More Galactic Recipes, available from the same online retailer. And again, it won't break your bank. Now, the Star Wars Holiday Special revolved around what seems to be a very tenuous idea. Instead of Christmas or Hanukkah, it revolved around a celebration called Life Day on Chewbacca's home world. And all kinds of silliness ensues. Another interesting piece of trivia within the trivia is that a much younger Bea Arthur had a role in this, running one of the cantinas. Bea Arthur, she of Golden Girls fame. We know largely what's going on with some of the castmates from Star Wars. For example, Harrison Ford has carved out quite a seminal career for himself, starring in Star Wars as well as the Indiana Jones films and really iconic films such as Blade Runner. He's actually filming the 4th installment of the Indiana Jones Adventures, as it is called, currently on IMDb, and that I think is slated for release in 2008. Less is known about Mark Hamill. Several of you probably know that he had a very bad car accident in between the 2nd and 3rd Star Wars films. And he's actually gone on to do quite a bit of voice work. Interestingly, he had a role as just additional voices, as per IMDb again, in the film The Little Mermaid by Disney back in 1989. He also did a voice in the Animaniacs spin-off Pinky and the Brain. And more currently and related to Star Wars, he does a voice of Luke Skywalker, of all things, in Robot Chicken, Star Wars, which Seth Green has a heavy hand in creating. What about Darth Vader? Well, we all know that James Earl Jones did the voice for Vader, but what about the man who is actually underneath that big helmet? And it's not Rick Moranis that I'm talking about. The person who played Darth Vader physically is British. In fact, his name is David Prowse. He's from Bristol. And he, for some reason, had a falling out with George Lucas. And in fact, he was only in the first few films. In later films, they got another actor to play him. And he said that, interestingly, James Earl Jones was selected because Lucas felt there were too many British accents in the film, and he wanted to better target his American audience. So James Earl Jones, as well as a few other American actors, were used to voice over the various captains and commanders that were part of the Empire. If you want to know more about Star Wars, interestingly, there wasn't too much on the official Star Wars site with respect to the 30th anniversary, but certainly, if you haven't found it already and you want to immerse yourself in the world that is Star Wars, you can go to www.starwars.com and let yourself loose from there. However, although Star Wars has amassed quite a fan base over the last 30 years, there is a bit of trouble in paradise. In fact, so disenfranchised have some people, myself included, become with the demise, in my eyes, of the Star Wars films, with the recent 3 incarnations from George Lucas, that there has been a rebellion of sorts against Lucas himself. And in fact, if you go to the website thinkgeek.com, you can purchase, to show your distaste and displeasure with George Lucas, a t-shirt that says, "Joss Whedon is my master now." The caption reads, "A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, three films captured the imagination and obsession of an entire generation." And they did. "But the Holy Trilogy has fallen like the Old Republic, and George Lucas no longer has power over us. But there is a new hope, a new world and set of characters as real and alive as those we remember from our childhood. We have a new target for our obsession. We have a new master now." And as a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I can only condone the supporting of Joss Whedon as the new guard of fanatical fans to support an alternative fantasy sci-fi universe. And the Buffyverse does seem like a rather pleasant place to dip one's toe into now and again. There's absolutely no question of the huge cultural impact that Star Wars has had, particularly on those of us who grew up with the films. And in fact, where there is Generation Y and Generation Z, there is, of course, the generation that started all this letter hoo-ha, Generation X. And Matthew Good, he of the Matthew Good Band, who hearkens, of course, from Vancouver, or to be properly accurate, Coquitlam, in the early days of his career, put out on the EP Raygun this song, Generation X-Wing. You're listening to My Science Project on CITR 101.9 FM in the city of Vancouver, in a galaxy not so far, far away.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friend with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electro-pop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns.
On CITR 101.9 FM, every Monday morning.
From 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense, and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow across it, and we're making it like young. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville.
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
It is useless to resist. Don't let yourself be destroyed as Obi-Wan did.
There is no escape. Don't make him destroy you. What happened to your father? Obi-Wan never told you. I am your father. Come to me. I am your father. Sons, I am your father. Slaves, I am your father. Know it to be true.
No!
You have only begun to discover your power. Join me and I will complete your training. With our combined strengths, we can end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy. If you only knew the power of the dark side. I am your father. Come to me. I am your father. Sons, I am your father. Slaves, I am your father. Know it to be true.
No! No!
My master.
There is a great disturbance in the Force. We have a new enemy. That this boy is the offspring of Anakin Skywalker. He could destroy us. The Force is strong. The son of Skywalker must not become a Jedi. Can it be done?
He will join us or die, Master. You can destroy the Emperor. He has foreseen this. It is your destiny. Join him. We can rule the galaxy and his father and son. Come with me. It is the only way. I am your father. Come with me. I am your father. Sons, I am your father. I am your father. You know the truth. I am your father.
I'll never join you.
I am your father.
that the Star Wars 30th anniversary is just around this time and happened technically in the month of May is rather convenient for a holiday that a lot of us celebrate in the month of June, which is Father's Day. And although Darth Vader is perhaps not the role model of the perfect dad, it certainly is a great segue into the next few stories that I'm going to talk to you about. There seem to be a few different lines of thought coming up about just how important fathers actually are to the health and development of their kids. Some studies seem to suggest that the input of the dad is particularly important and makes a really positive contribution to the baby's later health and success as an adult. And other studies suggest that it's really not a big deal to be parented by a mother alone. Now, of course, we all know people who have been raised by one parent or the other parent, and although some of them might have their quirks, a lot of them are particularly well-balanced people, perhaps even more so than those of us who have been raised by a mom and a pop, or in these modern times, two moms or two dads. I wonder if any of you watch the HBO series Entourage, because if you do, then you'll know of the actor of whom I am about to speak. Adrian Grenier, who, as I mentioned, is in the series Entourage, was raised without a father. So, single mom. And this eventually drove him, at the age of 23, to do a feature-length documentary, his very first, called Shot in the Dark. It was screened back in the 2006 Toronto Film Festival. And this article comes from Acclaim's magazine that was published back in September 25th of 2006, where Adrian Grenier talks about how he was setting out to prove that fatherhood is really just a biological phenomenon, as he says, just fluid and empty spaces, and really has no impact on the emotional and psychological well-being of the child. This documentary, Shot in the Dark, apparently comes at a time when there is still a debate about whether or not children, and boys in particular, need their fathers to become healthy adults. In 1999, a study was published in the journal American Psychologist by researchers Louise Silverstein and Carl Auerbach of Yeshiva University in New York. And their study was called Deconstructing the Essential Father, and it led them to conclude from their data, and to considerable outrage from some groups, that the available data do not support the idea that fathers make a unique and essential contribution to child development. Earlier in 2006, this idea was taken to new heights by a researcher named Peggy Drexler of Cornell. She's a psychology professor who published a book called Raising Boys Without Men. Drexler followed a cohort of largely middle-class boys from the ages of 5 to 9 years old, from single mother-only families, and charted their emotional and behavioral development in comparison to a control sample of boys from the conventional mother and father or two-parent families. And Peggy Drexler found that the boys in her study, according to her, were thoughtful communicators who were caring and sensitive, but just as willing to engage in traditional boyish activities such as skateboarding or roughhousing. She also noted that these boys were remarkably resourceful in securing male role models in their extended families and communities. So in that sense, it complicates the data a little bit that perhaps a male role model is important to healthy childhood development, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a biological father or even a man who lives daily in the same household. Another point that Drexler raises is that fatherlessness is not inherently a problem. In fact, it could be that typically single mothers are in a disadvantaged socioeconomic situation. They're poor, they may be discriminated against because of their gender or their race, and this prevents the mother from raising the child with the kind of support that ideally she should have and the child needs. So it could be that it's just that
fatherlessness correlates with this impoverished or disadvantaged single mother situation, but it's not the fatherlessness itself that is the issue. This is Austin Powers with Daddy Wasn't There.
Are you radioactive? From June 11th to 16th this year, hundreds of radio files will descend on Vancouver for the 2007 National Campus and Community Radio Conference, presented by Vancouver's very own CITR Radio. Featuring over 50 workshops covering everything from podcasting and turntablism to documentary production, and taught by CBC personalities and nationally known campus and community radio producers, this conference has something for everyone. Plus, every night, delegates are treated to our concert series, including bands like the No Luck Club, the Evaporators, the Choir Practice, the Beelines, and many more. Check out www.citr.ca/conference for more info. See you in June.
Welcome back to my science project on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Julia. My co-host, Anne, shares hosting duties with me every month. I'm on 1 week, and Anne is on the 2 weeks after that, and we hip-hop back and forth. Today's show is about the 30th anniversary of the original Star Wars film, and because Darth Vader was such a model father, and because Father's Day is right around this time of year, we're also looking at some science related to dad stuff. The University of Calgary and the University of Alberta have partnered up to do a pilot study that looks at the role of dads in a different way in terms of infant development. Published back in May of 2007, so just recently. They did this study because first-time fathers are typically shortchanged when it comes to support and preparation, particularly in terms of communicating with their babies. And in fact, programs for fathers are often based on models that work for the mothers, such as sharing feelings and experiences about child rearing. And typically, the dads who were involved in such mother-based studies weren't really thrilled with the format and didn't find that the programs were terribly useful. So this team of researchers, who one of them is Dr. Joyce McGill-Evans from the University of Alberta, she notes this point that fathers tend to prefer parenting education programs in which they can actively participate. And what that means in the case of this study is sending workers into the home with the fathers to observe their interaction with their children and to involve themselves with the dads and educate them as this is going on. The study recruited 162 fathers of five-month-old babies, and it was started back in 2004. The dads were videotaped on two separate occasions teaching their five-month-old baby to play with a new toy. The home visitors, who were trained professionals in infant development, showed them what the fathers were doing correctly and how they could improve the quality of their play with their kids. What is interesting here is that home visitors found that dads would sometimes fail to notice cues their child was giving the dad, or they would fail to talk to their babies. For example, they would simply perform actions rather than saying something like, "Here is your pink elephant, let's play with its fuzzy ear and squeeze its belly and see what sound it makes." Compared to fathers in a control group, fathers who received the intervention maintained their sensitivity to cues that they had learned from this home visitor, and they increased their, what the researchers call, cognitive growth fostering, which I think is the stimulation of the baby's thoughtfulness and emotional and social interactions. Now, McGill-Evans and her colleague, Dr. Karen Benzies, who is at the University of Calgary, feel that more evaluation is still needed. After all, this was a pilot program, and researchers need to test the intervention within existing health and social service programming and with other groups of dads, for example, fathers who have preemie babies, who are typically much more of a challenge to look after and have different emotional responses than babies who were carried to term. If you're interested in reading about this study, it was published in the journal Fathering, and the title of the paper is Effects of Parenting Education on First-Time Father Skills in Interactions with Their Infants. What's also really useful about this study is that very little is known about father-infant interaction relative to what's known about mother-infant interaction, because the relationship between mothers and babies has been studied by several people for quite a while. So it's an interesting new field that clearly there are differences in parenting between mothers and fathers. But do these carry over to major effects? I mean, does what a dad does influence a baby in a way that a mother's interactions with that baby simply cannot? There was a study published a bit earlier in 2006 in October. This came from New Scientist, and it seems that dads may have more of an influence on their children's language development than one previously might have thought. Lynn Vernon Figgins at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill and her colleagues sat in on playtime with 92 families with dual incomes and observed how much each parent spoke to the child. Children whose father's vocabulary was more varied when the child was 2 years old had more advanced language skills at age 3 compared to fathers who had less of a sophisticated vocabulary. Again, this is interesting, and it feeds back into what the U of C and U of A researchers found, in that dads tended to speak less to their babies and asked fewer questions of their children than did the mothers, suggesting that in the case of this study from Chapel Hill, it wasn't how much the fathers spoke to their two-year-olds, it was what they said and how they said it that was then taken up by the kids. The outcome of the study was that mom's vocabulary does not seem to have a significant impact on language development, but Vernon Fegan speculates that because the mothers were speaking so much more on average to their children than were the fathers, that there might be a threshold above which vocabulary doesn't matter too much, because the moms are talking so much that it more than made up for any kind of lack or slightly lower vocabulary than perhaps the fathers, because the fathers were speaking much more sparingly to their children. So it could be that perhaps when parents' vocabulary falls below a certain threshold, which is more likely to occur with the fathers in this study, children's later expressive language development may be impacted in a negative way. If you're interested in this particular study, it's available from the Journal of Applied Developmental Psychology, and Lynn Vernon Fegans is one of the authors. With all the support that exists for mothers, whether they are single or in a relationship with a partner who helps with the raising of the child, there is an organization for dads. This is Fathers Direct, the National Information Center on Fatherhood. The website is www.fathersdirect.com, and it's a really incredibly comprehensive looking website. It has everything from religious and ethnic issues, abuse and domestic violence, advice and support, information for young fathers, for stepfathers, for separated families, information about schooling and learning, early years, maternity services, and I assume paternity time to be taken off, news, training, diaries, and information shared by other fathers, policies. Fathers Direct seems to be very well connected and an advocate of fathers' rights, and there's research on that as well. So it looks like a really cool site, whether you're a mother or a father, but particularly if you're a dad looking for a forum to get some support about rearing your child and doing different things or better things or whatever kind of things that are all for the good of the kiddo, FathersDirect.com seems like a really good place to start. Before I leave you...
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to radio station EXP. Tonight we are featuring an interview with a very peculiar-looking gentleman who goes by the name of Mr. Paul Caruso on the dodgy subject of are there or are there not flying saucers, or UFOs. Please, Mr. Caruso, could you give us your regarded opinion on this nonsense about spaceships and even space people?